Hello and welcome to Bad Boy Cinema. I am your host, Rick Reel, and today with me, as always, is my co-host, Elliot Film. Elliot, how's it going?
I haven't thought of a way to respond yet, so I'm going to say...
I open the episodes the same way every single time. What do you mean you didn't have a thought?
I don't think about how I'm going to obfuscate pretty good. Because pretty good's not interesting, so I have to. I'm all right.
You can
I'm
talk about life. Your day. You could have living the dream. You could have just done a personal anecdote, but you know.
I can do a personal anecdote.
I went to the library today to get more movies.
I did go to the library today, and I picked up. Wouldn't you know it? What a Girl Wants, starring Amanda Bynes. I also picked up Lost in Translation. The Sofia Coppola film. Look out for that. Probably never on the show, but maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
Who's to say?
Not me.
Write us an email, badboycinemafanmail@gmail.com. Let us know if you want us to do Lost in Translation.
And then leave us a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. Yeah, whatever. 5 stars, obviously. Because it's a 5-star program, unlike the movies that we review.
The only movie I've given 5 stars, and I don't think you've given any. I've given 5 stars to Heathers.
I haven't given a 5-star yet, and I don't know if
you're a tough critic.
And that's why people trust my expertise on movies, is because I give everything like a 2.5 to 3.5-star rating.
Which should be the case. It's like, this is average. This is slightly above
this
average.
This is fine. Like, it's, you know, most things are fine. They're, you know, especially with more modern films, we've not like there's a formula to making movies that you can follow every single time and have a banger, but you can follow a formula and have a perfectly fine, watchable movie. And there's so much money dumped into these studios not taking risks.
I'm not gonna say which studios, but a lot of studios follow a formula to make a perfectly fine film. And that's
most of them do. And it's like, you know, it's fine. Like, most movies are fine, you know. And if you really like this one kind of movie, then you'll think, oh, that's great. And it might be more stars. And then, you know, most movies are in the middle. But one movie that's not in the middle is the movie that we're talking about this week.
Starring Big Malcolm Fat in the Liar. Middle.
Directed by
Sean L.
Don't know who the screenplay is by, but it is starring Frankie Muniz from
Malcolm in the Middle. Malcolm in the 2.5 stars.
Paul Giamatti and Amanda Bynes from All That and The Amanda Show.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of it at this point in her career.
Easy.
Did Frankie Muniz do other stuff? Like, was this supposed to be his like big break into film? No, he had a couple other things before this.
Yeah, he did Cody Banks. Cody Banks 2.
Cody Banks is
I don't know. I wasn't around at the time.
Yeah, he did a lot of weird shit until like, you know, the 2010s, and then it fell off.
He retired.
The last thing he did was 2018. No, he has some TV work. He has some TV work for like voicing stuff.
That makes sense.
Some of it's himself. Yeah.
He's what is he doing? Race cars now? He's a race car
doing
guy.
Race car. Yeah, I think he just does race cars and hangs out. I mean, good for him. You know, he just made his money. Yeah. He's like, I'm good.
I do recall seeing a tweet of somebody being like, wow, Frankie Muniz really fell off hard. He's not doing anything anymore. And Frankie Muniz responded and he's like, I'm 19 and I have $40 million and I'm retired. So who's the loser? And totally valid. I'm happy for him. He's doing fine.
He got out of the game when the getting was good, you know?
Yeah, he doesn't need
to be doing... As far as we can tell, didn't suffer a whole lot of trauma from being a child actor, which...
Yeah.
You know, who's to say how common that is?
Who's to say? There were some allegations, but... of his trauma, but it turned out...
He's doing fine, though. He didn't develop schizophrenia or like text underage people that we know of. So,
yeah, not yet. Well, he's still got.
I think at this point he's probably good.
You know? Yeah, he's fairly well adjusted. As far as a public persona, he's doing race cars. But Big Fat Liar, what a picture!
What a bad picture. Seeing this movie, you know, I would give it maybe a 1.5 star.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to bother putting this on my letterbox because it's, that would imply that it was worth my time and it really wasn't. But I remember surprisingly a large amount of this movie. Like this was a very brisk, like hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And I'd seen minutes. This 88 minutes, not even an hour and a half. And, I had seen it. Allegedly in, I mean, maybe in cryogenics, but you know, hypothetically when I was a child, of course. And yeah. A lot of the scenes, you know, were very familiar, even though I'd only seen it exactly one time before this. I was like, really picking up everything.
Stays with you.
It does stay with you. Not even like any of the scenes were particularly funny or
good
or bad. It's just, it was, everything was there and you remember it, I guess.
Yeah.
It's hard not to remember Paul Giamatti being blue.
Yeah. Even I remember that, and I've never seen this movie before.
And I, you know, watching, I think I remember watching the trailers and like, I think the expectation, at least for me going into it, did anger management exist before Big Fat Liar or after Big Fat Liar? This feels like anger management for kids.
I felt like this was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for kids.
Well, with the amount of film references in this movie and also the fact that everything is like written for 10-year-olds, it was very confusing as to who the movie is really for, right? Because it's like all these references to, you know, jokes like the jokes that about movies that like clearly only an adult.
Yeah, they're like referencing Indiana Jones and E.T. and like 10-year-olds don't.
And Urkel,
watch those movies. You know? Yeah, the Urkel was an interesting choice. Jaleel White killed it in this film.
He might be actually the best part of the movie.
I think in the pre-show,
I said that Paul Giamatti was the best, and I think I disagree with myself from 15 minutes ago. It's definitely Jaleel White. One of the best instances of an actor playing themselves in a movie.
Yeah.
I think maybe ever.
Yeah. I mean, who's he up against? Al Pacino and Jack and Jill.
Oh, that's tough. We should do Jack and Jill on the show.
We're going to do a Sandler month. I don't know. Pick a month. August.
August.
Okay, August, Sandler month. Check it out.
Yeah, because you don't want to put another month too close to JC month.
Yeah.
Bless up, but, you know, yeah, I think August is fine. There's some Uncut Gems in there. That's a good movie.
Yeah, we'll do, like, Uncut Gems, Jack and Jill, Mr. Deeds, and, I don't know.
Click.
Okay, sounds good.
So we can compare Click to Bedazzled, you know.
Yeah,
the kind of, which we already did, but we can do it again, but from the other perspective, because they're really the same movie anyway. But back to Big Fat Liar, the gist of the film is that Frankie Muniz's character, I believe Jason is his name, is a compulsive liar, and you know, everybody doesn't trust him because he just lies about everything almost for no, I mean, that's what a compulsive liar is. They lie for no reason.
Yeah.
He lies about everything.
Now, this may speak to my level of media literacy. Did you understand that it was The Boy Who Cried Wolf, like, immediately?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I immediately clocked that. Did you not?
I did not consider it at all. And the villain is named Wolf, and the kid is lying all the time, and nobody believes him. And I was like, what an interesting original plot line.
Really?
And then at the end of the movie, I was like, wait a minute. This guy's name was Wolf.
You're like a tip of the hat to the writer, whoever that might be. And, well, anyway, so he in school is punished for, like, lying and not doing his schoolwork, which is, and he has to, like, write a story so that he doesn't go to summer school or whatever. And then, runs into Paul Giamatti, the film producer, who is just, for whatever reason, driving his limousine through a suburb.
Yeah, he's like,
wasn't in L. Like, so he didn't live in L.A., right? Because he has to get tickets.
Yeah, he lives in Michigan.
It is very unclear why Paul Giamatti was.
It's like
in
Ari
Michigan.
Aster just like being in a Lincoln in a Town car.
Like, I think they could have just had it set in like a California suburb, but then I think it's not as appealing as like a fantasy for a 10-year-old to like live it up in Hollywood, you know? It doesn't make any sense, but you know, I don't think anyone was supposed to really.
Yeah. You're not supposed to look too deeply at the screenplay.
Honestly. I mean, I don't believe that, you know, Marty Wolf was shooting on location for whatever the chicken movie was in.
Yeah.
I don't know. In Michigan. Yeah.
In Greenbury, Michigan.
Greenbury. Yeah. We have the Wikipedia article. But anyway, my first big beef with the movie is that when he's telling the lie about not doing his homework or paper or whatever, he kind of spins a yarn, you know, he's really telling a story when the paper itself is just telling a story. Like, he's just so lazy, which I mean, I guess is a common trope, right? He's so lazy that he like does more work than just doing the thing he was supposed to do. So he doesn't have to do the thing he's supposed to do.
Yeah. I mean, we're all victims of that in some capacity.
Right. But then, like, you know, Sandra Oh is like, or just like write a story and then turn it in like 6 hours, which doesn't make any sense, but whatever. And then there's no pushback. He just immediately goes, oh, I can just write a story.
Yeah.
Like I've been doing when I tell lies. And it's like, you didn't consider that.
I will say in his defense of that, I didn't realize you were like allowed to have fun in school for a while.
Yeah.
When I was in school, it was like, write a 5-paragraph essay and it's just all like regurgitating information that you have to get from books. Cause remember, I grew up in the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
And then like one day I realized you could be making jokes. You could be being creative. That's allowed, but they don't tell you that outright. They're just like, do exactly 5 paragraphs of 3 sentences each.
Yeah. But like, also if the assignment is to write a story, like,
yeah,
you know, like I get what you're saying. Like cause you can have fun with an essay if you know how to spin the topic in your favor, right? But when it's just a creative writing assignment, like I think the implication is surely there that you write something creative because it's creative, right? Again, it blew my mind that this kid who's like telling stories is like, oh, I could just do that as the school assignment instead of just like mind blowing. Anyway, but then Paul Giamatti steals the
story, and it's ironic.
Then which gets into like a weird, like, you know, then he's like, oh, I lost the story because Marty Wolf, the producer, stole it. And they're like, well, that's clearly you're lying. And fair. I don't want to fault the adults for not believing him, because that's like one, the point of the narrative structure of The Boy Who Cries Wolf, which I clocked immediately, just to reiterate. And
they don't have him cry wolf before that.
He goes, there's wolf.
Yeah, you know, he does literally cry wolf, but he you know, he's not like getting called out for lying. They believe him every time until they don't, and then immediately he's crying wolf. You know, it's not beat for beat the original fable, which is why I didn't clock it. And also, I'm a little bit stupid.
And then he's like, oh, I'm gonna just go to LA and make Paul Giamatti tell the truth.
Yeah.
Which is a stupid plan, but he's 14, so.
It is stupid. I think that based on the fact that, like, immediately he starts making commercials and trailers for Big Fat Liar, if he.
Well, I think it was like, there's a time skip, I think, of to an extent.
I don't think that. Well, I think he did go to summer school. And they cut that.
Like,
whole
I think
part
like
out.
A month or two passed, basically.
But if he told them, like, I wrote this story, it's called Big Fat Liar, this is what happens, and then they start doing trailers, he's like, yeah, I wrote that. Remember, I.
Yeah, that, and then. That's exactly, and then
it's produced by Marty Wolf. Google it, look it up on Wikipedia.
And then later he still needs funding to, like, shoot the movie, even though he has trailers. Like, I'm like, that's not. I don't think that's how, I don't know a lot about movies, but I don't think that's how that works. I think they usually have a finished product. They cut that into a trailer.
Yeah.
And then they ship it to the theaters because it's coming soon, not coming maybe, never.
Maybe
I don't
in
know.
2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he didn't even have a finished script and they're like putting trailers.
Yeah.
Yeah, whoever
I think in the internet age, this movie would have made more sense. Like, he could have been scrolling online and they're like, oh, Marty Wolf is creating this original picture titled this, and he would have been like, oh, that's my idea.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in the internet
age,
that's
my story on AO3.
Yeah. Well, but, like, you know, you could be like, oh, I wrote that for school, and I was, you know, I'm a huge film buff, so I'm on the film Reddit. I'm on the R movies. And some idiot
was like
disgusting
posting films on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. I'm following Synesthetic on Twitter, and he's just posting Marty Wolf
an
pictures.
He's posting an AI-generated poster for a movie that only the title is released.
Yeah. Yeah. And Hideo Kojima is just like retweeting it, you know.
And that would be a much better film. Wouldn't have starred Jaleel White. Probably, you know, ironically, it might star Amanda Bynes.
Yeah, probably. Really, there's a lot of the Nickelodeon people you could dip into for this movie. To replace Jaleel, and it would have been fine.
Yeah.
I wonder what's happening there. Yeah. Amanda, speaking of Amanda, though, she did not need to be in this movie. She exists right. Just like kind of deliver her signature sense of humor.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, oh, is she going to be a love interest? No.
No. Which is good.
Which is fine.
I don't think
that.
We should have children's movies with love interests.
I think if the kids are like, I think they could be, it is weird. I agree.
I don't think that adults should be writing and producing movies where 2 14-year-olds fall in love. We don't need it.
I don't disagree, but it wouldn't have been the first time that would have happened.
Absolutely true. I'm just saying.
Like, if it did happen, I would have been less surprised than it not happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I couldn't remember. But then, like, you watch the movie and you're just like, okay, so she's not here to be a love interest. She doesn't really have any kind of reason for being here. She has no character arc. She's just funny, I guess.
Yeah, she's just funny. She's just, like, kind of, I don't know, assists the pranks. I do love the genre that has died out. This is another genre that has died out.
They don't make movies like this anymore.
They do not make movies like this anymore. Children owning adults
with like funny pranks.
Yeah.
Home Alone is obviously a classic example.
I mean, that's peak of the genre. But this, you know, it's no slouch. And it's this is where the children are the aggressors in the, it's not home defense. This is like, we're going to go to his house and ruin his life. And it's deserved, honestly. He did one wrong thing and he wouldn't admit to it. So I'm glad that they killed him.
They did. Well, if only.
If only.
Yeah, and I guess with Marty Wolf, like cartoonishly evil. Like I don't. I think by the end of the movie, I feel like Paul Giamatti figured out how he was playing.
Yeah,
Marty Wolf. But the beginning and maybe the first half and maybe a little bit into the second half, it's just like he's all over the place with like the kind of like smarmy producer that he's trying to portray.
Yeah. Like in the beginning when he steals the story, he's like, he's kind of on our good friend Jason's side where he's like,
yeah, he's like lying is cool. And that doesn't, like, that like, that never really comes.
Well, it's
like, here's the thing, like the thing that he's lying about, like, the thing that he's lying about is something very like, why would you, you're of course going to lie about stealing a child's story that you're turning into your movie. Of course you're going to do that. It's not the same thing as just lying for the sake of lying. Like there's a very good reason, not that he should have done that, but if he was going to do that, obviously you're lying to cover up.
Yeah. I mean, he could have
your theft of intellectual property, which is not even touched on in the movie. They don't care about copyright. He's just like, tell my dad that I'm telling the truth, and you still make the movie. Like,
yeah,
there's no stakes.
He's not like, he's not like, give me a writing credit. He's not pay me any money. It's just
he's like just tell my dad privately that you did.
I don't want my dad to hate me. Can you just like admit to one person that you did this privately, and we're good. Which
and he doesn't
really a benevolent.
He could say that Frankie Muniz wrote the paper that my movie was based off of.
Yeah,
he could frame it that way. Be like, yeah, you know, I saw his paper. I was going to give it back. You know, he could still tell a lie, but then you know, like spit. Like, there's no reason for him to not call the dad. Just be like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. Like, you're still letting me make the movie. Great, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, and he's just like, all right, I'll call your dad.
You can even throw him the writing credit. Like, who cares?
Well, it's going to affect his reputation that he's, you know, stealing. But he's not even asking for that. He's not asking for money. He's not asking for a starring role, an extra role. He's just like, just tell my dad. And then he's like, all right, I'll call your dad. And then he's like, hey, security, come kill this 10-year-old.
And they're like, oh, we're just going to send you back home.
Yeah. Bad guy. But this is for children,
blue, so
which is great. Great scene.
The marketing of the movie makes him being blue seem like it's more of a thing.
I mean, it's kind of a big
thing. And it's still a pretty big thing, but then he like unblues himself at the end of the movie and he's like normal. And I'm like, well, I feel like he should have just stayed blue.
Yeah. The other thing about him being blue is like he's blue for a long time, but nobody really comments on it. People are like, you're entirely blue, and he's like, yeah, and they're like, okay,
fair enough. People get over it surprisingly fast.
Yeah, which interesting choice.
The music in this movie was so 2002.
And that's fine.
But it was, I was like, geez. And like the sequence that really pissed me off was when they're at the, where were they sleeping? Like a, not like a
some arcade
store.
Or something.
Yeah. I think they had like access to like a prop department.
Prop department or something.
But they're sleeping there somehow. And they're like, oh, let's do like a shopping spree thing, but we're just like playing around with the props. And it's just really like,
I liked during that.
Didn't need to be there.
Didn't need to be there at all. That was really like padding the runtime, which is, again, less than an hour and a half.
Exactly. I was like, it's tough to have to cut out a scene from a movie that's 88 minutes long.
I like that Amanda Bynes is like changing outfits. But because Frankie Muniz is a boy, I guess, they're just like, we'll give him like a bow tie and like he's just holding stuff. Like he's not wearing any fun costumes.
Yeah, he's just like acting goofy with goofy props.
He's but, like riding. Yeah, Amanda Bynes
gets to wear like different dresses and shit.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Looking at the soundtrack.
My internet is acting weird.
That's fine. I will. I'll cover. I don't know. I'll vamp. Does this help? So on the soundtrack, we got Smash Mouth. We got Duran Duran, Eiffel 65, Fatboy Slim, The Baha Men. Mm. Some classics of audio.
Wait, Baha Men were in this?
They were I think they were over the credits.
We could talk about the credits.
Yeah, let's get into the credits of this film.
Yeah, so when I watched the movie, I had two main questions. The first being, why was Amanda Bynes in this? Like, you know, could have been anybody. Like the character didn't need to exist.
So that's She was selling tickets
because she's selling like star power, but like the way the character was written into the movie could have been more.
Yeah.
Like not from a marketing perspective, but you just remove Amanda Bynes' character. You could have made Frankie Muniz Amanda Bynes, cut him out entirely. And you could have made the movie just her doing weird shit. That might've been a better movie. Get rid of Frankie Muniz. He's not bringing his A game for this one. You could have just made Amanda Bynes Frankie Muniz. You would have been good. And then the second thing that I wondered while watching the movie is that clearly whoever was writing Marty Wolf really had an idea in mind for, you know, like a producer. And what was weird to me is that the attitude of like his character, like as a child, I would have assumed he was the director. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Paul Giamatti comes off as like a really bossy, obnoxious director. And
yeah, he's like Chris N.
Like Chris N if he was evil. You know?
Yeah.
And not necessarily like you know. I don't think a kid watching the movie even knows what a producer does.
I'm not even sure I really know.
Right. I mean, because I was sitting here like, so he's just the producer. And I just thought that was a weird detail. So I'm like, clearly whoever wrote this was thinking about a specific producer when they were right. Like, I was really like, who was this about? This is so weird. And then, of course, the credits played. I wasn't paying attention to the opening credits. So that when the credits were playing, I saw, you know, that who wrote Big Fat Liar, who did the screenplay, was a certain Dan Schneider, and the movie was also produced by Brian Robbins and Mike Tollin. I'll get to that in a little bit. But Dan Schneider was the creator, or at least the showrunner of the Amanda Show, as well as he did work on All That, which is where we got Amanda Bynes from. Which I believe also at this point in time roughly is when Amanda Bynes was probably getting big enough that she wants to sort of be in her own movies. I think, you know, Dan Schneider wanted to move out of children's television. So I think this was, I think he was like, we're putting Amanda Bynes in this movie, you know, like I think he broke her apart
pushing
for this movie so that Amanda Bynes could be in it. Cause I don't, you know, and maybe they're like, well, we need a male lead. So then they hit Frankie Muniz as the male lead. Cause it feels like maybe movie is
for boys first. Yeah, she was like 16 is my math.
Yeah, I did the math as well. And Frankie Muniz is older than her in this movie, which crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, he crazy is a
he looks like
weak. I think
he looks like he's 10 and she looks like I don't know, I guess 16, but she looks significantly older than him.
I thought the bit of him being like, I'm actually 14 was him being a compulsive liar. Because they mention it a lot. He's like, actually, I'm 14. Get it right or pay the price. And I was like, oh, it's funny because he's lying about this. He's clearly 9.
Yeah, right. Like the youngest looking 17-year-old maybe of all time.
He's 17.
I think he's 1 year old. He's 1 year old. He's Amanda Bynes was born in 86. He's born in 85.
That is wild.
It is crazy that he's older than her.
Yeah. As I said, the medical term for him is pipsqueak.
Did Marty Wolf call him a pipsqueak at all in the movie?
He should have.
If he didn't, that was Dan missed out on that one.
Daniel Schneider.
Daniel Schneider.
is a crime to not call him a pipsqueak in this film. I'll say that.
Oh, we'll get there. no, but so the other question of who I think Dan Schneider was writing about as the producer, given that he himself is producer and has a penchant for self-insert characters in his work. I think he was just going off of how he acts. He's famously pretty he's kind of like, I don't want to say like bipolar, but he can be very cool guy to work with and also like a huge asshole to work with. And that's not even getting into kind of the weird stuff that he puts into his TV shows. You know, the weird kind of riding the line on what's appropriate in children's, you know, television, which to somebody's credit, Big Fat Liar seemed pretty clean in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, things could have definitely gotten a little weirder in terms of like the costuming in the props department or the lengths they go to commit a prank. Could have definitely.
Yeah. Like what I've seen from iCarly and Victorious and other sorts of shows, like as far as a Dan Schneider joint is concerned.
Very they definitely could have been him. Like Amanda Bynes, let's make Marty Wolf eat your toenails, and then there's like a toenail cutting scene, you know, like that's definitely something that could have
happened and it didn't, and I, you know,
that absolutely would fit right in this film, and they didn't do it. So
and credit where before and maybe this is director Sean Levy, because I just want to point out that Brian Robbins and Mike Tollin have been involved with a lot of other Dan Schneider works and productions. Yeah. And so it wasn't the producers on this who would be reeling him in. It's maybe, you know, somebody's credit, I guess the weirdness being put into the shows doesn't really happen until, you know, Zoe 101, iCarly, Drinking Josh. That's, you know, that's kind of more of the turning point. As far as that stuff being added, like there's some weird stuff in the Amanda show, but not I think to the quantity or the.
And I can't speak to those because severity. I was incredibly nervous when they came out.
Right, I've done a lot of research because when I saw his name is who wrote it, I was like, oh my god, it's all coming together, you know.
Yeah, I wish this was an Amanda Bynes vehicle rather than a Frankie Muniz vehicle.
again, Frankie Muniz did not need to be in this at all. And it would have probably been a better movie, because then I wouldn't be asking, gee, why is Amanda Bynes here? I would have been like, oh yeah, there's just one character.
Yeah.
And like, you could even play her being like kind of weird and just talking to herself, and it would have been
fine. Like, you know, like not, doing
not to foreshadow her, you know.
Yeah. Future. Just doing like anime voiceovers of like,
it could have been like Lizzie McGuire, where she has that little cartoon.
Yeah.
That she interacts with. They could have done that with Amanda.
Yeah. And Amanda is also famously known for portraying multiple characters in the same show.
She could have done a prestige.
Like a Tom Hardy. What's the Legend? Is that the movie where he plays twin brothers?
Is the boxing one?
I don't know. I've never seen it.
That's Warrior.
She could have done The Parent Trap.
Parent Trap, Big Fat Liar with Amanda Bynes would have been, because there could have been a lying twin and a truthful twin.
Yeah.
And maybe they kind of meet in the middle. You know, the truthful one goes, yeah, sometimes you got to bend the rules a little bit. And the lying one, you know, learns the value of telling the truth. And that way there's a reason for both of them to be there. And then you can have Amanda Bynes bouncing off herself. You could have literally just done Amanda show sketches like as the comedy bits in the movie instead of this whatever dumb bullshit. You could have had this stupid shopping spree in the props department. That would have been cooler, because it would have been Frankie Muniz just having like a sombrero and being like, isn't this silly? No, it's just a little racist, you know, implying that that's silly. You know, like, I don't.
Speaking of.
I just rewrote this to be a good movie.
You did. We should be producers. Hollywood, you have our number. Hollywood, you have our number. On my Letterboxd review, now I said a lot. Normally, follow me on Letterboxd, folks. Normally, I will do one little quippy line. I did six for this movie. One of those referencing what we haven't talked about yet. The casual racism is less than you'd expect. And the fat phobia doesn't go unchecked. So it's like a little bit woke, not really. They, you know, Paul Giamatti does like a little bit of a racist accent.
He does some Chinese voice.
He does Chinese voice at Harold from Harold and Kumar, John Cho, I believe.
Wasn't John Cho supposed to be like a John Woo?
I think so. Like, yeah. Yeah. Cause he was like
off with the,
do the doves.
Stuff. Yeah.
We need doves.
Which again, what child would get that? And it's not presented in a smart enough way for it to be funny to an adult. So it's just for you know, a weird cinephile 10-year-old. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And that's okay. We get it now. I didn't really think about it at the time. But now that we're bringing it up, yeah, I get it. Yeah, there's only a little bit of casual racism.
It's almost exclusively for Marty, and he's portrayed to be bad.
Yeah.
And maybe Dan Schneider self-insert, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't think he would tell himself for being, but maybe he is racist. And then he is telling on himself, because I think he does that. So I'm not saying Dan Schneider is racist. I don't know. But, you know,
we're not ruling it out.
All I'm saying is that he does have a penchant for being a self-insert character. I think that Marty Wolf is his self-insert character in this movie.
I also can
say that the only racist character in the movie is Marty Wolf. And you can put those facts together and do whatever you want with them.
Make whatever conclusion comes natural.
And all this allegedly, whatever, you know, we're good.
Yeah.
Legally, this is a joke.
Legally, we're doing satire. I will say it's very common.
I hate it. I always hate when people are like, guys, it's like, it's satire. Because the people who make that claim have no idea what they're fucking talking about.
Yeah. I like calling anything that's not satire, satire. I think that's fun. I think
like, satire it's going to escalate to the point where some YouTube idiot is gonna like murder a guy and be like, guys, it's satire. I was doing a prank. It's satire, so it's fine.
Yeah, it's funny.
Because some guys are gonna be like,
people murder people. Think about it.
Yeah.
There's no media literacy anymore. It's satire.
The satire is like, it's saying something is satire is like one step removed from being like, you know, all credit goes to whoever originally made this when you're like reposting like somebody else's like music video or something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I love that. Like, I don't own any of this.
Yeah. It's just satire is one little short hop removed from that. And I really dislike those people. I mean, they're mostly just ignorant. They don't know what they're fucking doing, but you know.
Yeah. And that's fine. You can be ignorant, but I hate satire because look, for the people out there listening, satire has to be satirizing something and you have to be taking a message away from that. So if in this movie, instead of being blue, they made Marty Wolf black, that's not satire. That's not satire. They didn't do that, to be fair, but that's not satire. And people would argue that, I think, because they're like, it's Hollywood. Think about it. That's not how that works. So yeah.
Do you think they made him, they picked the color blue so they could do the I'm Blue song?
Absolutely.
Yeah, like, okay, that's what I was like, okay, like, because once he turned blue, I'm just sitting there, I'm like, they need to do that, right? Like, that's...
Yeah, and
look, they got to reference that at some point.
Credit where credit is due, when he turns on the car and it automatically plays I'm Blue, it's a good bit. For a...
I mean, it's like... It's,
for a 14-year-old to come obvious... with that... Yeah. Absolutely. But for a 14-year-old to come up with that, it's pretty good.
Oh, because because it's not like he just coincidentally turned on the radio. He's like, I'm going to put in the I'm Blue CD. Yeah, I got
to
put in
Eiffel 65, set it to track 3. Like, he planned it.
He also
rewired his car to honk when he presses the brake, which I don't know that you can do that, but sure.
And then Amanda Bynes just has the manual will be like, good luck.
Yeah.
And I guess back then it really probably was good luck. Cause he's like, what's he going to do? Like pull up his flip phone and spend like $1 a minute Googling things on the shittiest, like the slowest web browser ever.
On the tiniest screen. That's
yeah.
Yeah. And that's fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A lot of the gags, maybe kids really like this stuff, but, It wasn't for the big kids. It was for
the dumb poopy babies. They don't make movies like this anymore.
They don't. They, yeah, they definitely.
They got to bring it back. But I will say also in this movie's credit, good use of cell phones for 2002. Like a lot of movies, even today, ignore cell phones because it creates too many plot holes.
Yeah, but... To counterpoint that, I think they only have good use of cell phones because they had to contrive that they flew across the country from Michigan to LA, when the movie makes more sense if they all just lived in that area in LA to begin with.
Yeah, but he's using his cell phone in the beginning when he's like, call my dad, I dare you. And then she calls his phone. Which, like,
true.
You know, you're not expecting
of that time. That's I'll give him that.
Yeah.
Dan wrote a good phone gag, or plot point, or whatever.
Yeah.
Gag's good, a strong word.
Realistic use of cell phones. And you know, you'll get movies today that they're just like, oh, my cell phone is broken. I can't call for help, or it's always conveniently out of service or whatever. You know, cell phones are too convenient in today's world to allow them in many films, which is contrived, and I don't respect it. That's why I gave this movie 2.5 stars.
Ricky Stenicki is a better movie than this.
I mean, it's kind of the same movie.
It's no, it is not. I mean, well,
is Ricky, kind of no, the same. No, because
John Cena doing whatever he's doing is funnier than Paul Giamatti. Because, like, right? Because that's the
look. If they could have had Frankie Muniz singing Jizz Jams, they would have.
Dan Schneider would. He would have. Well, he would have wanted Amanda singing those, but
yeah. And she would have killed it, honestly.
She would have killed it. Like Ricky Stenicki starring Amanda Bynes, who didn't have like a mental health crisis. Now that's a picture.
That would absolutely be a picture.
Because she could do all the characters and all the voices and shit. Oh, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, Amanda Bynes and I'll say one friend who is Zac Efron. I think that would have been.
That would have been great. And then you could have them be like platonic buddies, you know?
Yeah.
And you have a male or female lead, but they're just hanging, you know?
They're just hanging. Or wild casting. Amanda Bynes as Ricky Stenicki, and then the straight man played by John Cena. Now that would get you somewhere in Hollywood. Hollywood, you have our number.
Let us make movies. We should make children's media.
Before recording, we were like, they should stop making movies with children.
No, they should. No, I mean,
we should outlaw child actors by the end of the episode. We're like, let us be Dan Schneider. We would not be Dan Schneider.
We would not be Dan Schneider.
Let the record show.
If someone has to, and I'm saying nobody should. Nobody should be making children's media. But if someone or two people have to, let Rick Reel and Elliot Film take a crack at it.
Give us
Bad Boy Cinema Production Company. I mean, come on. We could have the monkey as a little logo. It'd be great. Yeah. People would love it. People would love to see that monkey on in the previews. They'd love.
And you know what? Here's our concession. Somebody has to make children's media. Fine. We'll have movies with children in them, but they will all be animated. Nobody's going to be looking at these children.
That's a good point, because then no one can be making a child do anything weird. Not that we would make a child do anything weird, but nobody could because it's animated.
You know,
just have to make them say something weird.
Yeah, and that's fine. They're allowed to say
weird stuff. No, it's not fine.
They're allowed to say weird stuff.
We just have an adult impressionist. Well, I mean, but then you just. Then you just get an adult to do the voices. If you're already not having the kids, you just get an adult.
Yeah. And
but that, you know, then we could still make movies for kids, just not starring any kids, which is fine. I would love to make, you know, a teen drama where everyone's like 30. They're all played by 30-year-old actors, you know?
And that's what I grew up on.
That's what we grew up on. And I think there's a reason why we did that to start with.
Yeah. People are like, it's so weird that they have, like, all the people in Euphoria are 30. And it's like, would you rather they be 16?
Sam Levinson was, like, taking notes from Dan Schneider and was like, okay, I know what not to do when I make the one. Yeah. Like, because the creepiest show of all time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else you want to add about this movie?
I don't watch it.
Don't watch a different Amanda Bynes vehicle.
Yeah, watch She's the Man. Or
genuinely watch She's the Man.
Easy A, which is the last movie she did.
Easy A, great film.
She's not in it a whole lot, but you know.
She's in it and she's acting.
She's a welcome presence in that film.
I think Amanda Bynes would have killed it in the Charlie Chaplin era. Her physical comedy and like her facial acting, it's nobody else can do it, I'll say. And she not one person can do it. And she invented the Amanda Bynes accent, and people don't really know what I'm talking about when I say that.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier. I don't know what you're talking about still.
But watch She's the Man and you're like, oh, nobody talks like that. That is very specific to her.
And I don't know if it's that specific.
It's very specific. Just go watch She's the Man, folks.
I think you just don't hang out with like regular ass Americans that often.
No, she doesn't talk like a regular ass American. I can.
No, I mean, not like a regular, like not like a, you know, mid-Atlantic accent or whatever the basic.
If you're watching She's the Man, it's a transatlantic, if you know what I mean. It's watch the movie and you get the joke, okay?
I think you have to watch the movie to get the joke. It's, you know, it's in the title.
Yeah.
The title gives away the joke.
I guess that's true. All right, folks. That's the episode. Check in next week where we'll watch something else. Check in August where we're doing Sandler Month. Check in, what are we doing? December, JC Month?
JC Month. What's up?
What up? keep coming back.
What is that?
What up? What's happening? Cool. Until next time, cool it.